Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Going to take a look at the world of insects today with Phil Pelletieri, UW Extension entomologist. But before we do that, Judith Sears-Poisson joins us. We're in our Half the Time pledge drive, asking you to help make this program possible with your pledge of support.
You know, Larry, we've cut this drive down from 12 days to just 6. That means more talk about the issues you care about, like insects with Phil Pelletieri, and less on-air fundraising. But it only works when you give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And last hour, our goal was 60 pledges, and I believe we received 43 pledges. So thanks to everybody who has pledged. Right now, we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $2,000, so that's very important to us. This generous challenge is offered by an anonymous donor. It's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. So get your pledge doubled right now at WPR.org. or by calling 888-202-2552.
You name it. You've heard about it on the Ideas Network and the Larry Mueller Show. Science, the environment, finances, great books, history, and of course, food. It's a valuable service, a service worth supporting. Make your contribution of $50 or $100 or whatever amount you choose to support the IdeasNet programs you enjoy. This is your chance to make the programs possible. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you know, supporting Wisconsin Public Radio right now is a great thing to do with just 2 minutes of your time. Just give us your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to give and how you'd like to pay, and whether you call or pledge online, we keep your personal information safe. We don't share it with any other organization.
Your gift will turn into the stories and programs that keep you connected to the world. Give now and double that gift because of our anonymous challenge pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
In just a minute, we'll be talking to Phil Pelletieri about insects we might see in our home during the winter. And talks like this are possible because of your financial support. So I hope you'll give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
We know you give to WPR to support the programs, but also as an added incentive for your good deed, we have something special for you.
You're right. You can receive a book, the book Garden Insects of North America, The Ultimate Guide to Backyard Bugs by Whitney Cranshaw. This is a fantastic book, and it's yours for a pledge of $180 or more. So give now any amount at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 and ask for the Garden Insect book as your thank you gift when you give at least $180.
You know, many listeners become donors out of a sense of social responsibility. They want to make a contribution to the greater good. If you think of WPR as a shared resource, part of the commons, if you will, and if you think yourself you've been getting value out of it over the past year or two or 10, it's time to put something back in.
Make a donation for yourself and really do it for your community as well. The amount is up to you. The important thing is that you participate. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Larry, we have a goal of 80 pledges. We're still looking for 77 in the next 75 minutes or so. Our challenge is still in effect. Your pledge now is doubled. So help out. Call 888-202-2552 or go to WPR.org.
It's our Half the Time pledge drive. This is a shortfall drive, just 6 days instead of the usual 12. Your donation helps make it a success, so please do give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You can ask for the Garden Insects book with your pledge of $180 or more, and we actually put some sample pages from that book up on our Facebook page so people can get a sense of how great this guide is and what they'd be getting. Pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Again, that's WPR.org or call us, 888-202-2552. And thank you very much. And Judith, you'll come back, see us again?
I will.
All right. She'll be back. I can assure you of that. She will be back. But right now, I want to visit with Phil Pelletieri, UW Extension entomologist. And Phil, great to have you back.
Nice to be back.
We are, I'm going to fool around with the screen here a little bit, because on our Facebook page, and by the way, for those listening, if you're listening and you haven't been to our Facebook page, I hope you'll go to it. It's just go to the Larry Mueller Show, because there are some great photos that people have put up. One here from Emery of, it looks like an insect attacking a frog.
Yeah, it's a critter we call a giant water bug. The genus of this one is Lethoceras, and they feed on small fish and frogs. And Emery is nice enough to send me pictures on a semi-regular basis. He's got some great dragonfly pictures. He loves the outdoors, and this is really a pretty special picture. Believe it or not, that giant water bug will probably kill the frog and feed
wow.
on it. So.
Wow, that is absolutely amazing. What kinds of calls are you getting right now?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The typical fall invaders, we really have not seen a big push of multicolored Asian lady beetle yet, and I'm suspicious we won't. They just don't seem to be the numbers. Hmm. Box elderbugs are coming in, cluster flies, so that's going. But the other thing with this, things as warm as it is, I mean, insect activity is really staying up longer than normal. Ant swarms in the late afternoons on these nice, bright, sunny days where just thousands of ants are bubbling out of the yard. And a lot of wasp calls and spider calls. I'm used to spider calls in the end of the summer.
There we go. Art in Hillsboro has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Art. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. We live in rural Wisconsin, and we noticed the other night a hatch, I use that word loosely, of spiders in our yard. Thousands and thousands of tiny spiders, and at night, wearing our headlights, they glowed. They had a small spot on their head, which glowed. They weren't phosphorescing.
No, but what you're seeing is their eyes. Yeah, I think the light is reflecting from the eyes of the spider, and they will glow just very brightly if you get the right light intensity to them.
And what are the spiders?
Boy, I would probably have to see them. You know, in the grass, there is a family of that is often called grass spiders, but they tend to be pretty big, and they make a little funnel web, so they're not necessarily out and about as much.
No, that's not these. And this is the first year of the 11 years we've lived here that we've seen them.
Well, you know, one of the phenomena with spiders, the way they get around in the world is they go through a process called ballooning, where the little spiders hatch and they spin out a long silk of thread that catches the wind, and they literally can blow big distances. And sometimes you can, on the right, you know, semi-calm day, just see literally thousands of these coming through. So, you know, I would have to see them close up. Unfortunately, for spider identification, we need to see a pretty good picture of the eyes and how they orientate on the head. But so it sounds more like spiderlings, which are baby spiders. But as far as the family, I really, really would have to see them.
All right.
Not going to happen.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call if you have an insect question for Phil. And let's go to Beth in Greenfield. Hi, Beth.
Hi. Thank you so much. I've been curious about this for really long now. When I'm walking at sunset, usually in the fall, I hear an insect or animal making a loud scratchy noise, and it sounds like they're calling to each other. And I hear it all the way down as I'm walking.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
Those are male katydids.
Male katydids.
Now, katydids are big green grasshoppers, and the males are both territorial, so that's why you'll hear them answering back and forth from one tree to the next, but that's also the way they attract their mates, and it can be very loud. In fact, once in a while, I'll get calls from people where one's outside the bedroom window, and it's affecting their sleeping quality, and, you know, finding a green grasshopper in a green tree is not the easiest thing to
do.
So, but... I'm sure, you know, there's a number of species of katydids, but late summer, early fall, that's pretty typical, and they don't make noise until it gets dark.
What do they do for winter? How do they...
A lot of those species overwinter as eggs, and the eggs are laid into the tissue of the plants. Then they hatch the next spring, and it really takes them all summer to mature into adults.
In the tree or down on the ground?
In most cases, in shrubs and trees, so it's in woody tissue. The females have an egg-laying device that literally slits into the plant tissue and then inserts the eggs that way.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Back to our Facebook page, at the Larry Mueller Show page. We had a couple of moth. Joe sent us a couple of moth photos, I think, that are really interesting. And one, the moth stayed on the siding for a week straight and hardly moved. Then one morning it excreted a white substance that ran 4 feet down the wall. He's got a picture of it.
Mm-hmm.
What is the moth and what did it excrete? Yeah,
the moth, I can't see in enough detail, unless it's the first picture also.
It's the first picture also.
Okay, then it makes more sense. This is a sphingid, or what we would call a hawk moth. And there's two things that you will see moths. Often when they first emerge, they're carrying all kinds of waste in their body, and it's not unusual for them to void this. But one would expect that in the first day or so of their emergence. With this being as long as it is, and that being a very large moth, honestly, I think it's sperm. It was just excreting. It couldn't find a mate. And finally, its time was coming, and so it did the best thing it could. But I would think that's if this was a small moth, I'd say, boy, that's 4 inches of liquid is a lot. But these moths are about as big as your thumb. So as I said, I think that was a male hawk moth, and that's just the sperm there.
And so that's interesting. Here's another one. Catherine sent us a picture of a bug. She thinks it's a hister beetle?
No, this is a ditticid or water beetle, or predaceous water beetles. Mm-hmm. I can tell as much from the hind legs are made for swimming. And at this time of the year, much like the giant water bug that Emery had, we have a lot of insects that will leave the small ponds that would potentially freeze out, and they migrate to larger bodies of water, which is a safer place to spend the winter. And so you do find these beetles out of water. There are small ditticids, only a half inch in size, a bunch of species there, but some of the bigger ones get to be 2 inches, and this is one of the larger species.
So they're really cool. And again, I would urge you, go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. There's some really cool photos. We've got Bonnie in Madison with a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
We have had an issue with ground bees that have their nest pretty clearly in the ground as they're hovering around and going in and out. And they've been pretty pernicious in their ability to sting and create uncomfort with us. My question is, how long will they be around? Will the cold weather and the frost kill them? And if not, how do we get rid of them?
Sure. They're not bees. I can assure you they're probably paper wasps. And in particular, whether it's Eastern Yellow Jacket or German Yellow Jacket, they commonly nest in voids, old gopher burrows and the like. They will die out probably by the 1st of November, maybe earlier, just depends how the spring goes. And they do not come back to start the nest. What they do, though, is they produce queens that have to spend the winter under a rock somewhere, and they have to start everything from scratch wherever they find next spring. And so it's kind of a situation that if it's in a place where there's not a lot of people traffic, you don't have to mow by, you can let them go. But if it's in a place where, as you say, people are getting stung just because they're close proximity, and that's when they get agitated, is when the nest is threatened. What we would suggest is use a garden dust, usually about 7 o'clock at night, and just dust the entrance. And the dust works far better than any kind of wasp sprays for these kind of hidden nests. So you got about 2, maybe 3 weeks of activity. If it's particularly cold in the day, they won't be active. But, with this very warm weather, this is one of those creatures that, again, is probably getting active later in the fall than we normally would see because of this beautiful weather we've had.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I appreciate that. More things.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Phil Pelletieri, UW Extension Entomologist, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Phil Pelletieri, UW Extension Entomologist, giving us a heads up on the world of insects today. Larry Mueller here. Thank you so much for listening in. Candy in Eagle River has a question for you, Phil, so let's go right there. Hi, Candy.
Good morning.
Morning.
We live in rural northern Wisconsin, and we've had quite a problem with cluster flies, and we've had a pest control company come in for several years and spray the house, but we still get quite a few of them, and we were just curious about their life cycle and the best way to control them and whether the cure would be worse than the problem.
Well, what cluster flies look like to the average person is just a house fly, but their biology is very different. They are earthworm parasites by nature, go through 2 to 3 generations in a year. And you will notice in lush years, you probably see more because it promotes bigger worm populations. But in the fall of the year, they seek shelter. And probably in nature, they nest in caves and tree hollows and the like. But they will squeeze into people's houses, and then they will bother them all winter long. And so they're sometimes referred to as winter flies. The magic date seems to be, to me, somewhere around early September, where they start this congregating on the side of your house, and you notice that they'll crawl upwards, and that's what gets them under the siding or up in the soffits and the like. And so the only strategy I think that makes sense is to stop them before they get in, which means a relatively early application, end of August, beginning of September, on those sunny sides of the house and especially the overhangs with some kind of product that will knock them out before they get an opportunity to get in. And so, you know, when somebody's going through it, the two things I would ask, were they there at the right time and were they thorough enough? Because typically we get really pretty outstanding results if those things are in order as far as cluster fly control. Once you get to this time of the year, my fear is they're already in the attic and other spots, and you can spray all you want. You really don't get access to them because many of them are in wall voids. And then again, you pay the price. Some people talk about spraying in the spring. My argument there is they're leaving, so why bother with them? And the products, you know, pest control services usually have the equipment to do a good job, and a knowledgeable firm will know when to apply the stuff. You can buy the same products yourself, but the question is, do you have the spray equipment to apply it properly?
Yep. There you go.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. And Cindy in St. Germain, on to you now. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, Larry. Want to thank you for your program. My husband and I both love your show.
Thank you.
Especially stuff with animals in the outdoors. We live in northern Wisconsin, too, right down the road from Eagle River in St. Germain. Every fall, about this time of year, we see these little swarms of tiny little bugs. We call them lint flies. They're pale blue. If you look at them close, they look fuzzy. They're very, very tiny. My husband thinks that they have four wings, but they're so small it's difficult to see.
Mm-hmm. To be honest, I'm pretty sure they're out of a group that we would call woolly aphids. The question of what species, because there's literally a large number of them. They secrete these little white filaments that remind me of cotton candy.
Mm-hmm.
Often what you will see, some aphids have some pretty complicated life cycles, but many of them have to migrate onto a woody host in the fall to lay their eggs that will allow them to get through the winter. And so you do see congregations. It's quite common to see woolly aphids on apples and crab apples in other related trees in the fall. But there's also woolly aphids on alder. There's woolly aphids on maple, on beech. It's surprising the large number of species. But with the two pairs of wings, and somebody's got some pretty good eyes there because they're small wings.
Yeah,
but as I said, I'm sure it's some species of woolly aphid. And so they really don't hurt much. The one interesting thing on some of these species, if you crush them, they leave a stain that reminds me of a berry stain. So sometimes when they're congregating on the side of a house or something and people get out there with a brush to brush them off, they honestly can cause some problems there. But as far as the plants are concerned, it's really nothing to worry about.
Oh, okay. So that's not the same thing that I have on some of my flowers and stuff in the springtime.
Probably not.
Probably
as I said, when I think of woolly aphids, I think of woody plants in particular.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you much.
Yeah, thanks, Cindy. Mary in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question. I moved into a new apartment, and my cats were totally insect-free.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been noticing in the rugs certain bugs coming up out of the rugs with bug stuff all over them. And I've been seeing really strange-looking things. Mm-hmm. I know it sounds crazy, but...
Yeah, would have to see the critters. I don't know if they're grain beetles. There is something called a carpet beetle, but carpet beetles... really don't feed on anything other than wool, and so if this isn't synthetic, that wouldn't be. Sometimes I find it's something like fly larvae that are coming out of the wall because something died in the wall. I mean, there's lots of possibilities. Be more than happy if you can collect a couple of them. They don't need to be alive. Just send them into the lab, and I'd be happy to take a peek at them.
Well, some of the, what I call larvae, are square-looking.
Square-looking?
Like there's a bunch of different ones in there. I've crushed them open. And there's a bunch of small dots, and they move.
Again, I have to say, there's just so many possibilities. Your description just doesn't give me enough to work with.
Mary, can you send something to the planet?
It's not to me to get out because I have MS, but maybe my care worker would possibly do it for me.
Yeah, you could.
Yeah,
you
the address, just send the insect lab. The address is 1630 Linden, Linden Drive. Madison, and the university zip is 53706.
Mm-hmm.
You lost me back at the address.
So it's 1630
Linden, Linden Drive.
1630 Linden.
Madison, and then if you just put 53706, that's the university zip.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thank you very much for calling, and good luck. And please do mail that in. Mail it in. And... we have an email from Jim in River Falls. Would you talk about black flies and their life cycle, Phil? Having 47 bluebird boxes, I experienced losses this summer with hatchlings dead in the nest after a lot of summer rain. I understand that they only are around 3 weeks or so, the black flies.
Sure. What complicates this, black flies to an entomologist is a whole family of blood-feeding flies. And we have some black fly species out there almost all season long, although typically most of them are spring. Historically, though, there's one big river breeding species, Simulium meridionale, that is the one that we've had trouble. When its populations are high, we've noticed tremendous bluebird mortality in areas close to the big rivers. The farther you get away. So somebody that was in Milwaukee could be raising bluebirds and not know what we're talking about. But people in the western side of the state, and it's interesting. It's like you hit a fan. Great activity. Bluebirds are doing fine. All of a sudden, the black flies show up, and it's 100% death in the very young birds. And so, yes, this was a bad year. It has not been a bad year for 5 or 6 years, but we did get these comments. And it depends how far they go. The farther you get away from the big rivers, the less problem you see. Then usually by the time you get another brood off and we get well into the end of June, we're done because the population is out. But it's very hard to predict.
We have a listener, Paul, sent us another photo on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, wondering what kind of moth this might be, Phil.
Okay.
Pretty
so
one.
It's in the cutworm family, what we call the noctuids. This is one of the truer cutworms. I can't tell, because there's over 2,000 species, it's a little tough unless I got my books in front of me. But this does remind me of some of the, not the real common garden cutworms like black cutworm and spotted cutworm, but this reminds me of one of the cutworms. And as I said, I would just have to go to my books to give you a species name.
Mm-hmm. There we go. We have more email questions as well. Stacy from Madison wonders, I'm moving out of an apartment early because of silverfish problems. Since they eat things like cotton and other starches, are there any steps I can take to ensure they don't tag along for the ride to my new apartment?
Okay. Well, you know, I don't see a lot of silverfish damage for what they're there. I see more problems on rare books. And honestly, for whatever reason, they like to feed on rayon.
Huh.
You know, cottons, I don't really worry that much about them. They're not really overly aggressive. But the thing to be careful of here, I guess, is I think you've got more likely that you're going to transport them in boxes. So, you know, you bring your box in, you load it with clothes, you get it out of there. You don't let it sit around on the floor for a couple, 3 days, because then there's a chance one will sneak in the box seams and go traveling with you. That really is probably all I would suggest, is just be real careful when you're moving things that it's kind of in and out. Don't leave things sitting around. And then you got a pretty good chance. And the other thing is, the drier the environment is, the less happy they will be. They tend to do better in somewhat damper situations. So anything you can do to keep things dry will make life kind of tough on them.
Okay. Phil Pelletieri, UW Extension entomologist, our guest here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And guess what? Let me just take a look at our results here. We are in the early stages of our Wisconsin Public Radio Half the Time Pledge Drive. And Judith Sears-Poisson joining me again. You get a lot out of Wisconsin Public Radio, no matter when you listen. And today we're asking you to put something back into it.
Your gift is important as we try to raise all the money with just half the on-air fundraising, 6 days instead of 12. That means more of your favorite programs. We hope Larry Mueller Show is one of those. So just take 2 minutes and give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we had a dollar match up to $2,000 offered by an anonymous donor, and by golly, we've met that.
Woohoo! Thank you so much.
All right. Woo! All right. Well, I tell you what, we still have a ways to go because we have a goal of 80 contributions during this show. We have 20 in hand, so we have 60 to go. So we've met that dollar match, but your gift, no matter what the amount, if it's $50 or $100, whatever amount is affordable to you, that is the amount that we would like you to pay to pledge. Get your pledge matched. Right now, go to WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552 and make your contribution right now.
You know, I didn't know this, so I'm thinking a lot of listeners don't either. A lot of high schools and colleges regularly use WPR programs as part of their curriculum. Educators have recognized that their students can learn a lot about current events, great books, history, and so much more from listening to the discussions on Wisconsin Public Radio.
And we're really happy to be part of the classroom at bringing information and civic discourse to our young people. Consider a donation right now because you too appreciate that WPR is an educational resource that's available throughout the state. Hope you'll make a donation right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And don't forget, you can receive Garden Insects of North America.
Oh, that's right.
This book
Beautiful book.
It is. It's basically an impressive bug encyclopedia. It can help you identify everything from acorn weevils to zebra caterpillars. It's yours as a thank you gift for your pledge of $180 or more. Your pledge will help support the programs and you'll enjoy this great gift. That's the Garden Insects of North America book for your pledge of $180. Your pledge of any amount supports WPR programs and will be greatly appreciated. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
676 pages, if I'm not mistaken, in that Garden Insects book.
It is my favorite book. There is no, when I'm asked to advise people on a good book to have around, that is the book that I suggest, both because of the pictures, but it also has what's called a host index in the back. So if somebody has a peony and you want to know what bugs are on peony, you look in the back and we'll have them listed. The chewing insects, the sucking insects, and so as I said, it's extremely well done.
Wow. So there you have it, the Phil Pelletieri stamp of approval.
For a $180 contribution, and we hope you'll make that contribution right now. Where do they go for that, by the way?
They go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
We often say that it's easy to support Wisconsin Public Radio. The easiest way is to become a sustaining member. A sustaining membership is one that's ongoing, either from your bank account or from a credit card. That works.
And because it automatically renews, you don't have to remember to renew every year. Become a sustaining member right now with ongoing monthly gifts of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We are looking for 57 more pledges in the next, what do we got here?
About an hour.
About an hour or so. So about one a minute, but I just as soon get like 50 in the next 5 minutes. I tell you what. You can do it. You can help us out here with your contribution. Just go to WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552.
It's our half the time pledge drive. It's a very short fall drive, just 6 days instead of 12. We know you appreciate that, and your donation helps make it a success. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And ask for the book Garden Insects of North America when you pledge $180 or more. Pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Elizabeth from Racine says, Wisconsin Public Radio is my go-to station. Great information and good entertainment. Why don't you go to it now, too, at WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552.
That's WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have, Phil Pelletieri, he's on today. He's identifying all kinds of things that are posted on our Facebook page. He's got some great comments, great answers to questions that people have had. What about you? If you have a question for Phil, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call, and we'd love to hear from you. And we have Jan in Racine with a question, so let's go there. Hi, Jan.
Good morning. We have a 1 to 2 inch long, very, very hard shelled. They look like worms. They curl themselves into a spiral. They are on the carpeting in our family room in the walkout basement.
Sure. The critters are called millipedes, and coming indoors is a real mistake on their part. These are not insects. They're related to insects. They're arthropods that live in the soil and feed on organic matter. And this year in particular, in the middle of summer, we had absolute plagues of them. And what's going on is they crawl around at night looking for, I think, greener pastures. And when the sun comes up, they will accumulate where it's cool, damp, and dark. So sometimes it's on people's garage floors that are cement slabs. Sometimes it's along the north side. And if they sneak indoors, it's too dry. There's nothing to eat. And so they don't survive. One of the arguments then is if they're getting in, you look at what you can caulk and seal to physically keep them outdoors because they're harmless. I mean, they really don't hurt anything other than the contamination problem. But the other biological reality is that they can be coming from 500 yards or more away. They can literally be hundreds of thousands, if not millions of them in some cases. And people's expectations not to get any indoors is not realistic. And so it's all about how much organic matter there is around you in the soil. Usually it's not much of a problem in lawns. It is quite a problem if you have beautiful grasslands and prairies around just because that's the kind of habitat they breed in. And we find that last year was so wet and so lush, I think that's one of the reasons we're seeing so many of them.
My little tiny terrier tries to eat them.
I'm surprised because they're very, some of them honestly are so foul tasting. There are even a few species that carry cyanide with them as a defense. I remember when my kids were small, my son was trying to raise newts and they like to feed on various things. And I tried to feed them millipedes and they would spit them out. They were smart enough to know that they weren't good to eat.
There you go.
Thank you. There's no way to get rid of them other than to caulk on the outside and...
Well, there's no reason to spray indoors. I mean, that's a dead end. They'd be dead anyway. You just got to get them picked up. Sometimes people spray along the outside foundation. That helps to some degree, but you got to use a lot of volume. And again, it depends on the setting. If the numbers are, we had, in fact, the call came in this summer when we were on the show. Somebody said that he had 3 5-gallon pails a day in his culvert of dead millipedes. I mean, that's the kind of numbers you can get in the right situation.
Thanks again, Jan, for calling. Henry in Oregon, Wisconsin, we are turning to you now. Hi, Henry.
Good morning. I have a quick question here on walking sticks. Okay. What I've read is that Wisconsin does not have any flying walking sticks, and seems to be about towards the middle of August, end of August, we seem to get a bunch of them on our deck side of the house, and they have wings and they fly.
You sure they're not praying mantids?
Well,
they're long and skinny. The only reason that we do have 5 species of native walking sticks, so they're all flightless as far as I'm aware of. And where mantids tend to be a little bit bulkier bodied, but there's a similar body shape to them. And so that would be, and it's interesting because mantids never used to be in the state as far as overwintering, but now they really are. In fact, I got an email this morning from somebody up at Richland Center that is taking care of a mantid. I saw one when I went to the Brewers game this summer flying the guy next to me. I mean, it's just amazing where these guys are showing up. So if you see them again, give me a picture. Then I can tell for sure. But I'm leaning against walking sticks.
Okay. Well, these are long and slender and brown in color.
Yeah, that could fit for a mantid, too. As I said, the wings is what would lead me that direction. There are wing species of walking sticks in other parts of the world, but the species that we have in Wisconsin, the wings are so short, you barely see them unless you put them under a microscope.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Okay. Thanks, Henry, for calling. Appreciate it. Larry in Sussex. On to you now. Hi, Larry.
Hello. How are you?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Good. Well, I got a question about a couple spiders that I dispatched.
Okay.
Okay. They were, well, for lack of better description, let's see, the tarantula kind of looking things, and they had, let's see, sort of a delta white spot on it that sort of looked like a mandolin. And the legs were hairy like the tarantula.
How big, though?
So about the size of a half dollar.
The total spider or just the body?
The total spider.
Okay.
Would lean towards maybe some of the wolf spiders. If they're much bigger than that, we've got some fishing spiders that would fit that description. If they were somewhat smaller than that, they could be jumping spiders. We've got a number of hairy, fuzzy spiders, and it would be one of those three.
One of those three. All right, there you go. Thank you for calling. We have an unknown insect. We got another photo on Facebook here. This is from Carla. I found this bug dead last month in Iowa, and it was unusual to me. I took some pictures of it. Looks like it's got the Iowa Hawkeye colors, too, as a
well,
matter.
This is the biggest wasp species you will find. This is a cicada killer.
Oh.
Interesting enough, this is one of those creatures that, as a young entomologist in Wisconsin, I never saw them, but they really are quite common on campus now in the last 10 years. And I equate this is another one of those governors moved us to Missouri stories. I think that the lack of cold weather is allowing them. But in states south of us, in Iowa, in Illinois, and Indiana, they're really quite common. And as the name implies, they paralyze the cicada, they dig a burrow, drop it in there, lay their egg, and then their young literally devours that. And what's intriguing, they put two cicadas in a hole, it will turn into a female. If they put one cicada in the hole, it will probably turn into a male. And the female makes that decision by whether she fertilizes or doesn't fertilize the egg. So it's a really fascinating interaction
between
the amount of food and what the mother does.
And if you don't have access to your computer or Facebook right now, it's... abdomen is a
golden. Yeah, they're about 2 inches
black.
Long, and they're bright black and yellow marks, so they look like a giant yellow jacket to me, but there's a little bit more of a rusty color in the thorax and the like, and as I said, the best way to describe them, it would be the biggest yellow jacket you have ever seen, because they're about four times bigger than the average yellow jacket.
Gene in Richland Center, on to you now. Hi, Gene.
Hello. I have a question about a bug I found in my house, and it looks exactly like a scorpion, but it's maybe an inch, maybe 3/4 to 1 inch long, and it's pale pink, and its tail curls up over its back like a scorpion with that little hook point on it. I was wondering, is that really a scorpion?
Boy, I would not think so. In Wisconsin, we don't have any. You can get scorpions as close as Kentucky and the like. In the size, at first, if it was smaller, we have something called a pseudoscorpion that has the same kind of pincers up in the front end, but it's a very rounded body. It looks like a tick with pincers would be the best way to describe it.
I thought it was a little tiny, like a small caterpillar. So I caught it, you know, and then I looked at it and saw that the tail curves over its back and has that same, you know, little pincher thing on the end like scorpions have. So I smooshed it, and then the next day, I was vacuuming up in the top corner of my ceiling, and there must have been 10 or 12 of them up there.
I think I'd have to see it to give you a better idea, but we don't have any native scorpions. Not that I have not seen them in my career here, but there's always been stories of things shipped in from Taiwan. We had one case of a gentleman that had bought a computer from Arizona and opened the box, and he got zapped by one of the Southwest species like. So
I've been ordering a lot of stuff lately.
Yeah, but they don't live very long here. Just it's not a good place, and they have to have insects to feed on. And I don't know of any that would be quite the pink color. But, boy, if you have some dead bodies sitting around, you can chip them off. I'd be happy to take a peek.
Oh, I sure will do that.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Phil Pelletieri, UW Extension Entomologist, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are looking at the world of insects today with Phil Pelletieri, UW Extension Entomologist. Thank you so much for listening in. Call us with your questions at 800-642-1234. Rosie in Woodruff, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Rosie.
Good morning.
Morning.
I just had a quick question. If Mr. Pelletieri could talk about carpenter ants a little bit. My neighbor's property, about 10 feet away from my property line, is a large balsam that has been... I think it was maybe 3 or 4 weeks was all it took for there to be a huge pile of sawdust at the bottom of the tree, and you could hear them munching voraciously. I know they were going to put some sort of treatment around the bottom of the tree, and the munching seems to have stopped, so I don't know if they've vacated or have perhaps died in there. And what I wondered was, since I have many balsams along my property line there, they're talking about, they want to cut this tree down. It's a very large tree. When would be the time to do it? I don't know if they're, I understand from listening to you before, they're not eating the wood. They're using it to nest in trails and things like that. And I just wondered if you had advice about when to get rid of that tree and possibly Also, my question was, what is, would be their food source? You said...
Yeah, they eat insects. And so the first thing it tells me, the only reason they're in that tree is because there's a hollow rotting spot. A sound tree would not support carpenter ants or attract them.
Okay, so it's is it a chicken or an egg? Was the tree bad and that brought the carpenter ants, or did they kill the tree? I understand.
And the secret to carpenter ants is there's only one queen. And so in their treatment, if they kill the queen, the colony's dead. And for that much activity, this was a well-established colony. I'm assuming it was there 3 or 4 years. You just don't get that kind of ant numbers until they get a long time to build.
Oh.
But finally, it reached a critical mass, and they're probably, you know, looking to make bigger areas. The other thing, though, that's a little bit hard to read is that carpenter ants will become less active in the fall. They don't have a big space need, and so they probably would be normally stop being active. Now, if you cut that tree anytime during the winter, it's so cold the ants can't move. That's not totally critical, though, because carpenter ants don't relocate. So it's not like you can disturb them and the nest is going to move into your trees. That's just not the way they function.
Okay.
So, you know, whenever is kind of a question of, but if you did it in the winter, you're rest assured. And again, I think the thing that it signals to me, if the tree was close to my house, my concern would be, well, there's a hollow trunk in there, and that's going to be more prone to storm damage. And so if people see ants in a tree like that, it's good to get an arborist out and assess the structural quality of the tree. And again, what it is a sign that there's something not right going on in the trunk.
Okay, and it doesn't matter when you cut them down. It's not like the ants are going to get shaken out and run a scampering wherever.
No, and everybody that runs anyway are sterile females, so they can't go anywhere.
Oh, brilliant. That's the point. I will let them know that. Thank you
so much.
I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Rosie. And Katie and Stoddard, on to you. Hi, Katie.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
I live in Stoddard. I live right on the Mississippi River, and so needless to say, we have a lot of bugs everywhere, and they get into the house, and so we get a number of really large spiders, you know, quarter size, half dollar size for the whole spider. I know what the water spiders look like and everything, but so I have a few of them that instead of killing them, I just put them in a jar, and they build a little funnel, and I figure whatever I catch in the house that I don't want, I just throw them in those jars and keep the spiders going. But of course, now I get all these box elders, and they won't eat those.
Mm-hmm.
And are they poisonous to spiders?
Well,
they don't have any natural enemies there.
In very few. The thing that controls them more often is a fungus disease. But when insects are brightly colored and advertising their presence, that's usually a sign that they are distasteful to things. And although I do know some species of spiders that will feed on box elder bugs, it doesn't surprise me at all that some avoid it, because, as they said, you know that they've got defensive compounds. And whereas if you see insects that are very camouflaged, that usually suggests they don't have those kind of defenses.
I see. Yeah, I was hoping to, get a good system going.
That's what keeps box elder bugs in. It's a native insect, and last year I was totally humbled by the box elder bug infestations, because the weather was very wet, and I usually don't see them do well with that. This year is the exact opposite. In the southern part of the state, it's been dry enough. I was expecting more box elder bug problems than I'm hearing about so far.
Yeah, well, thanks. I was just curious about that.
All right, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Phil Pelletieri, UW Extension Entomologist, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson joins us. We're in our Half the Time Pledge Drive at Wisconsin Public Radio. We're cutting our fall pledge drive down from 12 days to just 6. Your pledge right now is so important, because listener contributions make up more than a third of our budget. Isn't that right, Judith?
It is, and we need you to help make this short fall drive a success. Help us raise the money we need in just half the time. Your gift of $50, $100, whatever amount you choose, makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you can afford a contribution of $180 or more, we will send you a copy of Garden Insects of North America, Phil Pelletieri's most favorite book about insects. Just beautiful photography.
And we know that Phil Pelletieri is everyone's favorite bug guy. So.
Yeah, absolutely. We got 650 pages or so for a $120, $180 contribution. Be sure to ask for it, the Garden Insects Guide.
when you make your contribution. But you can do that by going to WPR.org. Or call 888-202-2552.
You know, Larry, we usually don't give our opinions on the air, but when we talk about Wisconsin Public Radio, we're happy to make an exception.
Absolutely. We're not afraid to say that we think WPR is a unique radio service, a service well worth your support. I hope you'll take a moment to voice your opinion right now. Make a pledge of support at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
The beauty of it is that you decide the amount of your pledge. Every pledge is appreciated sincerely, and every pledge helps pay for the programs you love on WPR. Like Larry said, consider asking for the Garden Insects of North America book as your thank you gift when you give $180 or more. It's a gorgeous guide and really fun to look through. You can pick that up by going to WPR.org or calling 888-202-2552.
You know, you might not have a life coach or a personal trainer or maybe an entomologist like Phil on call, but that's okay. When you listen to WPR, you get great advice from all kinds of experts like Phil Pelletieri. And what's the cost to you? Well, you get to choose. The Ideas Network is your affordable source for helpful information. It's a great deal. Give now at WPR.org or call with your contribution at 888-202-2552.
We love it that you connect with Wisconsin Public Radio for information, engaging content, and entertainment. And sometimes it all happens at the same time.
Yeah.
Your gift supports that connection for you and for others across the state. Leadership gifts of $1,000 and more are increasingly important to our continued success. If you can make a gift at that kind of leadership level, we would very much appreciate it. You can do that by going to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And please know that your gift of any amount is greatly appreciated.
Pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Judah Sears-Poisson, here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio, of course. Maybe your gift is $50, maybe it's $100, maybe it's $180, maybe it's $500. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount for you at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Thanks to everyone who's helped us meet the generous challenge we had earlier this hour. We're still looking for 46 more pledges, Larry, in about the next 40 minutes or so. Be the next person to help us along with your gift at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552. You'd think I know the number by now.
Well, I tell you what, it's in the heat of the battle here. Oh, in the heat of the battle, sometimes we forget. Oh, man, we pay for things that are important to us. Our mortgage, obviously, our rent is important. Food, also important. Michael Perry said yesterday, somebody asked him who his muse was, and he said, it's this heavyset guy that's kind of bald and holds his mortgage at the bank.
Yeah, his mortgage lender.
He's his mortgage
lender.
Yeah. That's his muse. Well, I'll tell you what. So that's important to him. Mortgage is important to me. Food is important to me. Is it important to you? I hope Wisconsin Public Radio is important to you. When you think about it, that should be very important to you, and I hope it is.
Because life just wouldn't be as good without it. Because WPR is important to you, we hope you'll invest in it today. Support the programs you enjoy and rely on by going to WPR.org or calling 888-202-2552.
And when you pledge right now, you can receive the book Garden Insects of North America, The Ultimate Guide to Backyard Bugs by Whitney Cranshaw. This book is a gift is yours for a pledge of $180 or more. So I hope you'll give now any amount, really, at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Ask for the book Garden Insects as your thank you gift when you give $180 or more.
If you're like me, I'm guessing you find that Wisconsin Public Radio is a great source of information about the nation, the world, Wisconsin, even what's going on in your own backyard, or as we're hearing from a couple callers today, going on in their carpets.
Mm-hmm.
You value WPR for the lifelong learning it brings to your life. You learn something new here every day, day after day, year after year.
And this continuing education is possible only because of support from listeners like you. Like any education, you get what you pay for, you get out of it what you put into it. So I hope you'll invest in your education at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And we still have a ways to go.
Yeah, we do. You know, to provide great radio, we need to pay the bills. It's just that simple. And we count on listeners like you to help us do that. You can help by going to WPR.org or calling 888-202-2552.
Quick and easy. You'll be finished in no time at all. I hope you'll consider a donation of $60 or $180. $120 would be great, too. Your contribution in any amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 helps to pay the bills, helps to make WPR possible.
And, you know, it really does take just 2 minutes of your time. You'll just need to tell us your name, contact information, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay for it. Consider using your credit card. It saves time, postage, and paper, and puts your money to work right away. No matter how you choose to give or how much, take those 2 minutes right now. No time like the present. At WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we're still looking for 43 more pledges in the next 30 minutes or so. So I hope you'll take that challenge up. We rarely miss our goals during
know,
this 11
really
to 12, 30 times
like
slot.
We do.
So we don't like that when we don't make it. And it's rare that that happens because people just like you go online to WPR.org or they call 888-202-2552 and make their contribution.
And it is our half the time pledge drive. It's a short fall drive, just 6 days instead of 12. We heard that you want more programming, less on-air fundraising. Prove us right. Prove that we can do this. Your donation will help make it a success. Give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And don't forget to ask for the Garden Insects book when you pledge $180 or more. Hi there, Larry Mueller here. So happy to have you along today on the Ideas Network. The changes in temperature, the length of days changing means a lot of insect activity for you and me. Sometimes it's hard to know what's a cause for concern and what's just an inconvenience, and we're lucky to have UW Extension entomologist Phil Pelletieri here for the next half hour or so to talk about the fascinating world of insects. He has lots of great information to share. He'll answer your questions. When you call in or when you email us or when you go to our Facebook page, you can call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org. And don't forget to check our Facebook page. Go to The Larry Mueller Show to post your comments and photos. Like the page while you're there to get updates on upcoming show topics. We'll be back right after this look at the news. Stay with us here on the Ideas Net. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, talking the world of insects today with Phil Pelletieri, UW Extension entomologist. Great to have him along, and thank you so much for listening in. We have a lot of callers online, Phil, and so maybe we should just go to the phones here. And Linda in Iron Belt, Wisconsin, we will go to you. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. All right, I have this, we moved up here this last spring, and we have a very old house, and we have spiders up the wazoo in our basement, but we pretty much know what they are. They got the little spiral webs and stuff. Out in our garage, in the garage window, there was this huge spider. I'd say it's tan, but it could also be almost a gold, and with brown stripes. And she, I keep calling her she, was so pretty. It was just unbelievable, and how big she was. She was like the size of a silver dollar, legs included. Mm-hmm. But her body was huge. And then she had this head, and you could see her eyes, and she was looking at you. And when the sun would shine, she was more active, obviously. And then, you know, when it got cold, she would settle down. But she made these goofy webs. There was no, not a nice web. I mean, it was just everywhere. And she was catching everything. And then there were little egg balls that I found. And my husband said, if you can get rid of that spider while I'm gone, you know, I'd be very appreciative. And so I went out there with a big Tupperware bowl and a cover, and I just scooped her up. And I took her out to the garden and let her go. And then I watched her walk away, and she was just, I don't know, magnificent. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering what kind of spider she was. And the only thing I've come across looking on the computer is American house spider.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, when I hear big, colorful spiders in the late summer, the most common ones that people send me are from a family we call the orb weavers. And these include barn spiders and garden spiders.
Okay.
But there's a number of species. There's one called a shamrock spider, one called a cross spider. So do orb weavers. And as I said, what they remind me of is a big, colorful marble, the females mm-hmm. do.
Yeah, and that's what her stripes look like, yep.
Yeah, and so I bet you it's out of that group. And they're not an indoor spider typically, but you'll see the nests or webbing set up in shrubbery and, you know, attached to the house. And in the strategy they use, the females will go as long as the fall will allow, but they do lay eggs that get them through the winter, and then they hatch into spiders that will...
How old do you think she was, having to be that size?
Most likely she developed from a little spiderling last spring.
Really?
Yeah. I assume that some of them can spend the winter as adults, but I think things are kind of harsh, and I just never see them in the spring. I always see them in the late summer, and so as I said, I think it fits that typical pattern of developing. And once the female, one of the reasons she's so large is she's often distended in the abdomen because of eggs.
Okay. That was the other thing we were wondering.
Yep.
I'm glad I put her out in the garden.
Yep.
Okay.
All right, Linda.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Ken in Green Bay, it is your turn. Hi, Ken.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you for calling.
Well, I don't know what's bothering my plants for the last 2 years. I'm talking about an area up in Marinette County in Wasaki. I have a place there, and I planted potatoes 2 years in a row. And just before they blossomed, the total plant disappeared. I mean, you couldn't tell where the plant was planted. So I just wrote it off last year as the deer eating it. So this year, the same thing happens again, but it also now attacks all my wife's flowers that were there, except for a few. And we can't even tell where the flowers were planted or the potato plants.
I would lean to the deer still, only because, I mean, we have things like Colorado potato beetles that will just devastate in a couple weeks period of time the potatoes, but there's always stems in larger veins of the leaves left behind. There's just, they can't feed into that.
Could it be turkeys?
I
looked for deer tracks. There are no deer tracks at all there.
Yeah, I don't know. I've seen turkeys eat lots of things, but I've never seen them run off of the whole potato plant. So yeah. That one you might save for Dr. Craven when he comes on. But
yeah.
As I said, it really insect-wise to happen that total and whatnot, and then a diversity of plants. We don't have that many insects that have that broad of a host range or diet. And so I would lean to something bigger, definitely.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for calling. Jackie in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Jackie.
I have contributed, as I always do.
Thank you.
And I don't call as often, but I have a question that I've never heard before. I wear hearing aids.
Okay.
And I have gone outside, and in the last couple of weeks, sometimes I only wear one. And then there is a hornet-type critter that will be flying around my ear, buzzing around the ear that has the hearing aid in. When I go out without them, they don't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible they're picking something up from a hearing aid?
Could be a frequency because, you know, we have both flies and it wouldn't surprise me that some of the hornets literally even find their mate by different wing frequencies. And it may just be the right match. And, you know, some of these things that look like bees and wasps aren't. And so, as I said, it my first guess, it's more likely a fly that's mimicking that. But I just wonder, again, if it's giving off a frequency that is similar to what they use to find their mates.
You mean something is trying to mate with my hearing?
That could be.
Insects are real interesting. If you get the right conditions, like we can have flies trying to mate with a spot on a piece of paper and whatnot, they sometimes don't seem real smart.
Well, there's a new one for me, Larry.
Thanks, Jackie.
Okay,
bye-bye. Appreciate the call. All right, Jackie always has interesting questions and comments. Tim in Cottage Grove, hello to you.
Hello. My question is, we have a lighter vinyl siding with plastic shutters that are decorative, and I washed my siding not long ago, and there was some wasps' nests in there, the paper wasps' nests,
mm-hmm, yeah,
that we blew out with the pressure sprayer, and there was some kind of a red or pinkish spots underneath the shutters where they were making a mess getting in and out. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that was from.
That's their
now,
waste.
All of a sudden, those spots are all back. And we do have quite a few box elder bugs, but I don't see the bees. I don't know what those spots are from.
I have seen box elder bugs leave some stains, but definitely the paper wasps leave a stain. And I have the same thing in the shutters under the shutters of my house, and that's how I knew they were up there. And we have this European species that's moved in the state the last couple of years that's notorious for making paper wasp nests up underneath things like shutters. And, you know, they have a liquid waste. You see the same thing with honeybees that, you know, they will leave a spotty brownish, reddish waste behind and the like. So, as I said, I bet you it's related to that.
Mm-hmm. What can I do to deter them from going in there?
Well, you know, what you find when wasps and bees go into void spaces like that, I like a dust. To be honest, it performs better than a spray. And so just blowing a little bit of dust up underneath the shutters would be really the most effective way. Because I think when you power washed it, you kind of blew them away, but I don't think you necessarily killed them. And they're probably back trying to reestablish a nest.
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Norman in Wausau, hello to you.
Hi, Bill. I have two questions for you. One is about my raspberries. The other is about pears. In the raspberries in the late summer, something just shreds the leaves on the raspberry plants over a period of about 3 or 4 weeks, and it takes out just the part where the veins between the veins that run out from the main part of the leaf.
There's a little green, very well camouflaged worm that we call a raspberry sawfly, and that would be my first guess because they're very dainty and leave kind of a lacy damage behind. And unless you turn the leaves over and look real close, you can miss them. So that would be my first guess.
Mm-hmm.
And what would you do to prevent that? Because it really, I think, affects the amount of photosynthesis that the plant can devote to forming the raspberries.
Yeah, well, it isn't as bad as it might look, but I agree with you. If you get to a point of 30-40% defoliation, you know it's going to cost the plant energy, and that will affect production. You know, you got a rough idea when it shows, and that's the whole thing is treating it early enough to make a difference. You know, almost any garden spray, as long as it's got raspberries on the label, they're not hard to kill. You could probably even kill them with insecticidal soap, but you got to make sure that you get the sprays from the underside of the leaf. And as I said, when you see the first little nick showing up, that's when I would treat it.
Okay. The second thing is on my pears, and I talked to you about it a couple of years ago, and you told me they were insect stings. The problem is, even though I spray them about every 7 to 10 days after the blossoms fall, I still get a lot of these little indents in the pears, and what happens right there, it's a hard thing. If you cut the pear or try to eat it, it's kind of gritty underneath. That's the response of the pear to the injury. So my question is, what is the bug I need to kill? The imidin that I use, that's the only spray insecticide I use in my orchard, that doesn't seem to be doing it, at least at the interval I'm using it.
Okay. Well, now, can you tell, other than the blemish on the outside of the pear, is it also deformed?
The pear itself is normal.
Okay.
But it's got all these indents, and under each indent, it's like a calcified little
sure.
mass.
Yeah. You know, that's the kind of damage you see from stink bugs. And so stink bugs are kind of subtle in some sense, and we don't see a lot of stink bug damage. And Imidan would normally pick up things like the Cucurlia or the like, but I'm not so sure it's such a good stink bug product. The other problem, if it is stink bugs, is they're kind of all season long. In fact, you know, we're quite nervous about the next big insect headache for us is going to be a brown marmorated stink bug, which is a Asian species that's been really tearing things up out east. And we just started seeing some activity last year, last fall in particular, with that. And that's going to be really problematic on pears and apples and the like. But if you got any of those pears still around,
yep.
Why don't you take a couple pictures, especially when you cut back a little bit, just for me to be 100% sure, and
okay.
email it to me, and then I'll do a little bit of digging because right off the top, I'm not sure okay. which of the pear products will pick up stink bugs.
Mm.
But
very
as I
good.
Said,
all right. Thank you very much for calling, Norm. Appreciate it. Anna in Eau Claire, on to you. Hi, Anna.
Hi. I'm just calling. You guys were talking about cluster flies a little bit before, and
yeah.
I was just wondering, are those the kinds of flies that fly in a cluster in, like, the middle of rooms?
No, no. The name comes from, they tend to congregate in clusters in void spaces under siding and whatnot in the winter.
Oh, I see. And then my other question is there any truth to the myth that if you hang a bag of water in the doorway to a room where flies are flying around in a cluster, that will keep them from congregating there?
It's a real common thing you'll see that people will talk about, put on the internet, but honestly, when it's been scientifically tested, there's no validity to it at all.
Okay.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Stacy wondered about the burning prairie and what impact it might have on insect populations. Any special considerations as to time of year or time of day?
People have been very concerned about this because there are some insects that seem to be severely impacted. And so one of the management tools you're seeing now is to leave certain amounts of the prairie unburned so that you have kind of reservoirs for these insects to survive. But totally burning it off on a yearly basis is not a good idea because it will have detrimental effects.
And we have one other question here that I wanted to make sure we got on. It's about gnats. Loretta wonders, even though the hard frost, they still have gnats all over the place. How long do they live and what kills them off?
Well, gnat is a generic term for a small fly. But my first thoughts is I don't consider we're done with the insect season until we have three very hard freezes. So we haven't been there yet.
Yeah.
Would have to see what the critters are. But we've got little critters that come out of leaves that you defined as gnats. We've got little critters that come out of the soil, all kinds of different things. And as I said, until we get that kind of combination. But if they continue to be a problem, if she catches some, we can at least have an opinion of where they're coming from.
Phil Pelletieri, UW Extension Entomologist, our guest today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Judith Sears-Poisson joins me as well. We're in the half-time pledge drive at Wisconsin Public Radio. You count on Wisconsin Public Radio for in-depth discussions on a host of issues, and we count on you to keep the discussion strong. That makes your financial contribution very, very important to us.
With your help, we've reduced the 12-day drive down to just 6. Every gift makes a difference right now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
We're looking for another 27 pledges in the next 9 minutes or so here. So that's a lot to get. Thank you if you've already given. If not, please help us stay on track. Help make our half-the-time pledge drive a success by making your contribution right now. Go to WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. This pledge goal is very, very important to us.
And we know you've been enjoying the conversation with Phil Pelletieri today, as you do every time that he's on. We hope you'll now take a few minutes to make this hour and many more hours to come possible. Put a value on the programs you enjoy every day and then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're talking about insects this hour, and you can pick up a great premium on this topic. It's called Garden Insects of North America, The Ultimate Guide to Backyard Bugs, written by Whitney Cranshaw. It's a gift to you for a pledge of $180 or more. Phil Pelletieri's favorite bug book. Give now any amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And if you contribute $180 or more, ask for the book Garden Insects as our thank you gift. Your pledge, any amount, supports WPR programs. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Take a second. Think about how often you tune into Wisconsin Public Radio, or maybe you never have to tune in because it's always on. Maybe it's every day on your way to and from work, over the lunch hour, and then some more on the weekends.
It's an important part of your life, and I know your day would probably be different. Worse, maybe, if you couldn't catch your favorite program. So make a contribution to keep this station that you rely on strong at WPR.org. Or at 888-202-2552.
Speaking of an important part of your life, Jamie from Green Bay says, I'd like to donate in honor of Larry and Renee's 15th wedding anniversary today. Congratulations.
Yeah, today is the day. And if I'm not mistaken, Jamie's birthday is today, too.
Well, there you go. For any kind of occasion, big or small, if you've never given to Wisconsin Public Radio before because you don't think you can give enough to make a difference, think again. Listener donations make up more than one-third of our budget, and that's a big third to have. But that doesn't mean we're asking you for a huge gift, necessarily.
many firsts. I wonder if Renee is going to call in with a contribution during the show in honor of our anniversary. I'm going to ask her about that. Many first-time donors give $5 a month for their WPR listening. You decide the amount that works for you, and please know it really does make a difference for us. Don't put it off any longer. Give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. It really... every dollar is much appreciated. Listener support is such a big part of why we're able to do this program. So I hope you'll make a contribution right now in support of this program. Put a vote into Wisconsin Public Radio for the Larry Mueller Show. Do it by going to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Larry, we're still looking for 25 more pledges in the next 6 minutes or so.
We can do that.
We can do it. You can do it. Pledges like yours keep us on track to support the programs you count on, and they help us reduce on-air fundraising by making this half the time drive a success. Prove us right with this audacious idea. Thank you if you've already given. If not, give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
How many times have you been listening to the Ideas Network and you heard something that stopped you in your tracks, something that was really interesting? We strive every day for programs that open your eyes and engage your brain, programs that affect your life. And that kind of radio happens only with your financial support. So please give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Be one of those 25 people that we need to call
in. Yes, you decide the amount of your pledge. Every pledge is appreciated, and every pledge helps pay for the programs you love on WPR. Consider asking for the book about garden insects as your thank you gift when you give $180 or more. You can tell your friends, Phil Pelletieri recommended this, and I picked up on it. You can go to WPR.org to do that, or call us at 888-202-2552.
We had a listener write in to say, I love people coming together in community to support WPR. Thanks. That's a great comment, isn't it?
It is, and we agree. Pledging is a great time for you and us to share our enthusiasm for the programs and the services we all love. Join the community in celebrating WPR. Make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Getting down to the final minutes here, there are several ways to make your pledge. Giving on the web is especially efficient, so you can just go to WPR.org to do that. If you're online now, you barely have to stop what you're doing.
You don't have to stop. You can multitask. When you pledge online, you save us the cost of sending a reminder. You save yourself the cost of a stamp and the bother of writing a check and remembering to mail it and all of that. WPR.org. It's that simple.
Giving couldn't be easier. Either at WPR.org or just call 888-202-2552. Just need your name, your contact information, the amount of your pledge, and how you'd like to pay it.
Save time and money. Use a credit card if you can. Or better yet, sign up for automatic sustaining donations from your bank account. You choose how to give and how much to give, and then you do it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we are still looking for 22 more pledges in the next 4 minutes or so. We can do it with your help. 21 pledges. Well, there's another one. Give us a call now at 888-202-2552. You can make a pledge that way. Or go online to WPR.org. Make your contribution there.
You know, Larry, more than a third of our budget comes from listener support. So every pledge is so crucial for our success. And we're trying to do it in half the time. It's our half the time pledge drive, a shortfall drive. We know that you appreciate hearing more programs, more guests like Phil Pelletieri. So we're trying to do it all in 6 days instead of 12. Some people might say we're crazy. We're hoping we're just smart. And your donation is going to help prove which one it is. Give now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
And don't forget, when you contribute $180 or more and you ask for it, we'll send you a copy of the book Garden Insects of North America. Beautiful four-color, all-color photography in this book. Phil Pelletieri says his favorite insect book. 656 pages of great information, and it's all yours for a $180 contribution or more. And, you know, we had 20. We have 20 more to go.
20. That's nothing considering how many people are listening, but how many of you will call. Call 888-202-2552. Or you don't even have to stop listening. Just turn around to your computer, go to the web, WPR.org, and you can make your pledge there. And, Larry, I want to make sure we thank people who renew every year in the mail and give loyally by electronic funds transfer. Their support is the backbone of our budget, and we really want to thank you all.
Thank you very much for that. And, again, we still have 19 more. We can still do this with your help. Go to WPR.org right now with a contribution. Or call us at 888-202-2552, WPR.org, or 888-202-2552. You know, it's kind of a vote for the program and what you hear on the Larry Mueller Show during this 11 to 12:30 time slot. And if you enjoy guests like Phil Pelletieri and the great advice that he and other people like Scott Craven, for example, give pretty much every day from 11 to 12:30, I hope you'll support us. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And Larry is too shy a guy to say it, but give a vote of confidence for Larry for the programming that he gives us. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And do it right now.